man. This aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the PBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to white man. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come
on the point
in?
Of order.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Sunday Times Politics Weekly with me, Amil Amrao. I'm joined in the studio this week by my colleagues, Sengisa Mvumbu and Apiwe de Klerk. Unfortunately, we don't have any of the ladies with us this week. Kwanita is off doing some stories and Zimosa is off sick. Hope she gets well soon. But guys, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you so much for listening in. We really appreciate the support. We've got a jam-packed episode for you this week. We're going to be talking about massive revelations at the State Capture Inquiry, which involves Crime Intelligence's Secret Service account and how it was basically looted to no end, mostly under former Crime Intelligence parts Richard and Bluley. We're also going to be talking about the sort of controversial decision by the Department of Basic Education to allow an exit strategy for grade 9 learners. They expect that they're going to go to some sort of technical and vocational training thereafter. So let's get straight into it, guys. Yo, we heard testimony over the past 5 days at the State Capture Inquiry from Colonel Dhanajaya Naidu. Now, he was a member of Crime Intelligence for quite some time, and then in 2011, he basically blew the whistle on massive looting of the Secret Service account. Now, the Secret Service account is used for operational purposes, like paying off agents, buying safe houses, purchasing vehicles, stuff that we need in our intelligence world. But it appears that under Mluli and Solomon Lazarus, who was in charge of the Secret Service account, they had basically used this money to do anything and everything. I'm talking overseas trips for themselves and their families, purchasing luxury vehicles like BMW 7 Series, Mercedes E-Class, Lexus, also just flying around the country, going on holiday in Cape Town, buying safe houses, and just anything you can think of is what happened. And this is what Naidu was telling Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, because he was a part of it. He described himself as one of Mduli and Lazarus's lackeys. He would basically go on their instructions and they just had the time of their life at Crime Intelligence. But you know, this really does me in, because we look at our intelligence capabilities now and some people argue that it's non-existent. You know, and it's stuff like this which lends to that. Because where you have this massive, it's taxpayer money that's supposed to be used for operational needs, but it's being looted for people on people in their own ends. What do you guys think?
Well, look, I mean, as you say, let me just pick up on your last point on how useless our crime intelligence is. No, it's very much useless. I mean, remember, we touched on this during the so-called xenophobic attacks, you know, in that our crime intelligence, which is supposed to counter criminal activities before they even happen, it seems to be always sleeping. I mean, in this country, there's a whole lot of big, massive crimes that happen. The underworld is having a field day as if we don't have crime intelligence. Therefore, I am not shocked at all that our crime intelligence, instead of doing what it ought to do, what we pay them to do, they're busy going on holidays at our expense. They're busy paying off their friends, bribing people, and all those kind of issues as revealed at the Zondo Commission. So it's sad. It's sad, Amil, that, you know, I think at some point in time, I know that the legislation allows for such things of slush funds and all those things. But I think we need to review our legislation.
Of course, because the Secret Service accounts are not audited like other accounts are, obvious, for obvious reasons.
Exactly. And there's a lot of hard cash that is, you know.
No, a lot of hard cash.
You know? So I think at some point we've got to, you know, review that legislation and sort of bring some, you know, accountability institutions or bodies that are independent from, you know, the intelligence world itself, you know, to sort of, you know, do monitoring of how our monies are spent. We cannot continue like this, because if legislation still allows this going forward, nothing is going to stop it. We're just going to have people, you know, coming out after 5 years, then what happens? You know, it's just going to be one vicious cycle, and it's very sad that we are at the stage that we are at. And, you know, with us, what I think also, you know, encourages this culture of looting in this, you know, grand scale is that everything in this country is sort of politicized. You know, we know, Richard Mdluli, he was very, you know, embedded within the ANC factional politics and all those kind of issues. I think another part of the cleanup should be to depoliticize these institutions of the state, because they've got nothing to do with the governing party and any other party for that matter. They are to work for the state, they are to work for the people, because we are the ones who pay them, we are the ones who fund them. So also that depoliticization will be very important going forward. And maybe then in that regard, there needs to be a broadened way in how these people are appointed to this, because you see a culture of people thinking they owe a favor to those that appointed them. You know, almost in our country, a president has got a whole lot of powers to appoint people into these positions, and when they get there, they feel the need to protect those that appointed them politically and otherwise. And this kind of, being unaccountable and, doing as you please comes in there. So, really, as a country, we have to look into this matter deeply going forward and see what kind of interventions we can bring into play.
Here's a prime example of what you were saying. Colonel Naidu and other people before the state capture inquiry, like Johan Boysen, accused Nathi Mtetwa, who was Minister of Police at the time, of appointing Mdluli.
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, we've heard allegations that money from the Secret Service account was used to build a wall around Nathi Mtetwa's KwaZulu-Natal home, which cost about 200,000 rand.
Yeah.
And he didn't deny it. He's sure, it was built. I didn't know where the money was coming from.
Yeah.
But that's just a bit blatant, isn't it?
Look, I want to touch on the part about it being politicized.
Mm.
You see, because it's politicized, when there's looting, the whole intelligence, when there's looting. You remember the witness before Naidu that spoke about how they had to pay informants for infiltrating the EFF or meeting with the students. What was it?
Colonel Kobus Rulofsa.
Rulofsa, yeah. So you get there, you say, but no sane person should be falling for such a story. But because the politicians' posturing is that these are the people who are trying to destabilize the country, it breeds a ground for looting, blatant looting. Also on the what you were saying, how they are for reasons of secrecy and intelligence, how they are unable to audit the account the same way they would. I would think they should find more stringent means,
at least
allow maybe an office within the Inspector General's office which would act the same way the AG's office act with the other state institutions. You know, at least you, even though there is that high level of secrecy and there will be clearance, but there is proper accountability. We don't have to, have to wait for whistleblowers to have to find out how there's been such grand scale looting. It's scary how these guys were leaving it up on our dime, and they were not doing anything to assist us.
One of the funny things that Naidu said was that they had gone to, I think it was Singapore, to purchase some intelligence equipment.
Yeah.
Right. And then they went for 10 days. They spent 4 hours at the shop the first day. And then the rest of the time, they all took 100,000 rand each from the Secret Service account. This is Lazarus, Mdluli, Naidu, and all of them. Took 100,000 rand each and had a nice holiday for themselves. Another funny thing was that Richard Mdluli had apparently appointed 7 members of his family into crime intelligence, right? And this is said to have cost the state about 5 million rand. Just for their salaries, for their vehicles. So they were given vehicles, they were given nice salaries, they were appointed as like colonels and captains. And then Naidu was saying that some of them were appointed to the cybercrime unit and they were given an office. And every time Naidu went to visit them, they were never there. They were shopping in the malls next door. And some of them never had basic computer skills, even though they're in the cybercrime unit. And another guy, he says, that racked up so much travel claims because all he would do was go to Mpumalanga to visit his family. You know, it's crazy. Because you have this sort of shadowy thing that's intelligence, you know, it doesn't mean you've got to... There must be no levels of accountability, as Apiwe was saying.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's counterproductive, isn't it?
Yeah, they need to... After these revelations, if they are serious, they need to have serious, stringent measures on how people account for the work that they do. I remember even the previous witness talking about people who had been paid or monies that had been spent, but you never get a report back to say this is what the person actually did or this is what the informant actually gave us and this is how valuable the information that they gave us was to and we were able to... Such things... Those should be basic. I mean, it's not rocket science. If you lead a team of five, each of them should be able to account to what is to what they were doing. Their missions are not secret to you.
Exactly.
And also, the people that you account to, those missions should not be secret. And therefore, that's how accountability works. They can't just pull a wool over our eyes under the guise of, it's intelligence and therefore we have to protect it confidentially and all of that.
In a perfect world, it would work like that, but this is a symptom of rot at every single level.
Mm.
From the bottom, where you have a handler controlling his agents, all the way to the top, at someone like Mdluli, where there's a systematic process of corruption that allows for this to happen.
Yeah. You see, here's another thing. I mean, I think the Office of the Inspector General on Intelligence has to be strengthened. I think that is one office that can help us in sort of, bringing that accountability that we're lamenting about. As things stand, you don't really know what is the role, of that office. That office is supposed to be the, oversight.
You know, once last year, just by the way, I sent a press query to the Inspector General of Intelligence and they responded in 6 weeks.
You know? So, yeah, that office has got to be strengthened. That office has got to be, like the hawk over the entire intelligence, crime intelligence, and all other, divisions within that space. And people must account to that office because that office is empowered to have this information because anyway, they report on their missions to that same office, So that office has got to be strengthened and have, people of accounting and all those kind of issues, people who are going to check how the monies were spent. And that office must be accountable to Parliament. Although the sessions in Parliament are closed, but at least those are public representatives that we elected, to provide that oversight. So if we strengthen the office makes everyone account within that space and goes to account to Parliament. At least we will minimize, if there's that, and that there's a strict rules as to, this kind of accountability, and maybe they can even report to the public on things that are not so sensitive. I don't see why it should be sensitive as to how much you spend. You don't have to tell us what you spent it on if, the missions are of secret nature, but we need to know how much money goes into these things and whether there were results, So I think that's what we must do going forward, man. We can't continue like this. I mean, this is like a bottomless pit where we just keep on throwing money. It's not getting food.
And when you talk about strengthening that office, insofar as it has to do with crime intelligence specifically, to be more proactive.
Yeah.
And I think for me as well, you need to appoint the right people. Because that's a big thing. I mean, you can't have a political appointment like someone like Mdluli or somebody else who doesn't have any experience in policing or intelligence or very little experience in policing and intelligence. So, therefore, you have your minister and maybe... And I remember Nathim Tetwa was talking about how there was a panel, but obviously it didn't do the right job. It didn't find the right person. You need to have a seasoned officer of intelligence who knows the entire environment in order to implement the right processes. But anyway, let's take a very short break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about the Department of Basic Education and their move of implementing an exit strategy for grade 9s. Tune in.
Racial identity politics, a phrase that has the potential to start an argument in just about any situation. That's why we're starting it first. Let's Start an Argument is a unique and insightful podcast series about the meaning of race to us today. Presented by researchers Cecilia Koch and Doctor of Philosophy Jason Werbeloff, the series aims to spark rational argument and meaningful discussion around this controversial topic. Fine, let's start an argument now on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's get straight into it. So last week we heard that the Department of Basic Education is looking to sort of implement a new process of an exit strategy for grade 9s, obviously with the sort of vision that they would then move into vocational training and technical training, all right? So it was aimed at sending more students to technical vocational training, but I think, and there's been lots of debate around this, right? The thing is, for our TVET colleges at the moment are packed. You know, there's no space for more students. So how are they going to do this? So some argue that, okay, this is all this is going to do is we're going to have younger learners now on the street without any jobs or without any opportunities. Other people are arguing that actually it gives them more time to sort of figure out what they want to do and move into that field before reaching matriculant age.
Insofar as it has to do with vocational training and all of, look, I think for me it just gives documentation, unlike previously, where you could still actually go to a TVET college after grade 9. It's just that now,
but now you've got a certificate to say,
that you are done with grade 9. Unlike you having a report from your school and all of that, and with that it gives you more power than just a report, and I think in a long run it will assist us in a number of things. One, for instance, they ask you for a grade 12 certificate to be employed in general work at government departments, in private companies, and all of that. It's sort of a standard now.
Yes.
Now tell me, Amil, if you are going to be a messenger, why must you know the Pythagoras theorem?
Yeah.
So now you have this large number of unemployable people because they, when they reach grade 12 or grade 11, for instance, because they were not so gifted in mathematics and they were in physics or science, and they were advised that we need engineers, and they get there and they find that, look, man, at grade 9 at least I could comprehend with these things. Grade 10 and grade 11 is difficult.
Yeah, and that's where you get the high number of dropouts.
So now if that person has that certificate and there's a certification process there, then you then get a regime, or rather, I don't know. Remember when the labor minister or which ministry announced that within government now you won't need to have experience as a requirement for entry level jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
So you will then go there to say you don't need grade 12 to do general work. So at government departments across private companies, you don't need grade 12 to be a cleaner, you don't need grade 12 to be a messenger. In fact, you don't need some PAs would not necessarily need. You would just say if you've got a grade 9 and a 1 year course for computer literacy,
yes,
you are fine, you get a job.
You know, I mean, I agree and disagree at the same time with this move.
I'll tell always you, a geese's move to it. Agree and disagree. At the same time.
I'll tell you why I agree. Ne? I agree on the basis that it is a fact that not all of us are academically gifted. You know, some of us are gifted in more technical work, like as Abu was saying. I mean, just to add on the things that you wouldn't need a matric. You don't need a matric to be a car mechanic, as far as I'm concerned. That is a handwork. That you can be taught, you know, you can exit grade 9, go for 1 year course at a TVET college, you know, get trained to be a car mechanic, you go and, you know, you thrive. And we need those skills, by the way.
Or a welder, for that matter.
You know.
And they pay a lot.
Or woodwork, that someone failed in matric. But anyway, that is where I say I agree, in that there is realization that not everyone is academic gifted, and the statistics are there to prove for themselves. Half the people, I mean, of 1 million pupils that start grade one, not even 500,000 reach matric.
Exactly.
The statistics have been there and they've been consistent all these years, you know. Right now, I don't know half the people I started grade one with, how they where they ended up in the system. Yeah. And I don't blame them. We all have different gifts and different skills. On that part, I agree. Where I don't disagree, I disagree in that it's populist in terms of how our government is taking education serious. First of all, our government doesn't take these FET colleges seriously. There's a, you know, a whole lot of issues in that space. Funding is not enough because we're still operating on this mentality that universities are the one.
Yes.
Whereas there's this realization now that not everyone needs to go to university.
Exactly.
Therefore, there needs to be a concerted effort from government to invest within that space of the TVET colleges for us to be able then to have proper programs and the necessary skills offered in those FET colleges, not just everything and anything. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, our syllabus itself at basic education is completely off the rails as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I laugh every day when I hear these ministers talking about fourth industrial revolution when our syllabus is structured the way it is. Mm-hmm. It is a complete joke. In China, in Asia, in most Asian countries, China, Japan, Korea, and all those things, kids learn coding
exactly.
as young as in grade one.
Exactly. We're learning about insects.
In this country, it's a complete opposite. Mm. I mean, I reached matric, I never learned anything about coding. And to this day, that is how our syllabus...
Wait, you switched on the computer when you were in grade 12?
I hadn't. Yeah, I only met computers. You see, so those basic things. I mean, where I disagree that although this is a good thought, it will not work because the infrastructure, the system, the syllabus doesn't allow for people who are gifted technically and otherwise, but not academically, to prosper. It's a complete joke. So in that regard, this decision is bound to fail unless we change the system from ground up.
This is where I agree with you, because I agree with the grade 9 exit strategy, right? But for me, whether your students finish in grade 9 or in matric, you need to first prioritize literacy and mathematics before, in the earlier grades. There's no sense having a grade 9 student exit the school when they can't read and write their first basic language. And we know this is happening.
Yeah.
Or they can't do simple addition and mathematics. What's the point? The second thing is that, and I was talking about this earlier, our TVET colleges are overwhelmed right now. We've got so many matrics, and I know there was a figure I saw about 500,000 certificates that haven't been given out yet.
Yeah.
So we need to find a way where these TVET colleges can absorb these new students who will be coming in from grade 9, and therefore we need to place higher emphasis on those TVET colleges. And then I agree with you where you say the curriculum. I feel like we need a total overhaul of the curriculum.
Absolutely.
It's just not working.
I agree fully.
the other thing about the certification of you at grade 9, it's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily mean after you are certified, you exit.
Mm.
It also means if you should you go to grade 10, grade 11 and realize that you made a mistake, you can, you have documentation
exactly.
To say, I still have grade 9 with at least grade 11 passed with this and that.
Yes.
You see, when you are then changing or going to a TVET college or whatever, you would be granted extra points than someone who's who just get as grade 9 and so on. So it's not necessarily that just because you have been certificated, because everyone would be certificated, but depending what you choose.
Mm.
So it's like having a grade 12 certificate anyway. People with grade 12 certificate decide, well, I can go and find a job with my grade 12 certificate. Others decide, no, let me continue and study with my tertiary education. But during their second year, they realize maybe because of one thing or the other, they can't continue. They will say, I have grade 12 and I had studied up until the second year doing this. So you are more employable than someone with just grade 12. I agree insofar as it has to do with strengthening the TVET colleges.
Mm.
It's something that we should not have. Let them be
at the
state where they are now. We used to produce professionals at that period before 94, the nursing colleges, teaching colleges as well, whatever decision that they took, that they closed them down and whatnot. So if my thinking is that when they introduce it, then there should be a directive to the Department of Higher Education. Also, the management of the TVET colleges, the way it's done, it's a mishmash. Yeah. Sometimes, it's between province and national now.
Yeah.
It's not as clear as the tertiary or rather universities and universities of technology. So, I mean, if you fix that, you can build more. They don't cost as much as building a new university. I myself think that is a workable direction that we should be taking as a country.
You see, just to emphasize on the point that Apio was saying about sector-specific, colleges, and also maybe to address that question that you were raising, Amir, of why these TVET colleges are overcrowded and overwhelmed by numbers. It is because it's everything and anything. You can go there and do anything. Mm. To go to Apua's point of doing sector-specific, really, I mean, during the pre-1994, regime, there were these teaching colleges, there were these nursing colleges, there were these police colleges, you know. We need to go back to a structure like that. But because now the world is going forward and things are more technical, we are more focused on this fourth industrial revolution. You have to have, technical colleges that are solely for technical work.
Exactly.
Where we build welders, we build engineers, we build. And then people who do humanities, they must have their own things.
Mm.
They're on the side. Then you can bring back your teaching colleges, nursing colleges, but on the side, but have colleges that focus on the necessary skills that we need going forward. And then those that go to university, which is more of, you know, the academics yourselves, Amir, you can go there and do those things, you know, so that you can be intellectuals in the future. But we need to have a system whereby we have technical colleges where we just call them technical colleges and you only go there for technical skills. We have humanity colleges for people who want to be clerks and all those other issues on the side, so that there is a deliberate focus and a deliberate intervention in terms of who gets employed here, the kind of teachers that we need in these technical colleges, the kind of students that we need here, the kind of skills that we offer that are going to take our economy forward and our country forward, not this free-for-all system that we currently have.
At the same time, we need to revitalize the job sector, because there's no use having a whole new bunch of skilled professionals coming out of the country and they've got nowhere to go.
But you see, let me attend to that. The problem we have that is because now people are doing things that are not necessary. As I say, I mean, we barely need nurses. We've got enough nurses who are unemployed already. We barely need people who are going to study towards that field. We barely need people who are going to study towards teaching. Well, although teaching in terms of medicine science is in a crisis, but those are specialized fields. But everyone who does teaching wants to be a history teacher, an English teacher, and all of those things. So our government, the problem is that we allow a free-for-all and anything and everything goes. If we are clear in terms of these are the skills. When you go to a high school, the advice is that the country going forward needs these skills.
Yeah.
When you make your options, please, although we are not confining you, but please emphasize on this if you want to be employed in the future. Because, and there needs to be, you know, that kind of teaching to say these careers in the next 10 years are going to be unnecessary. Exactly. Don't waste your time on these things. Here are the careers for the future. But we don't have that kind of education. You get there, it's a free for all, choose whatever.
You do HR,
you know, you
tourism management.
Exactly. what are those things, man? I mean, even our journalism now, you know, going forward.
Let's just cut it off there for this week. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining me in studio, and thank you all out there for listening. Remember, if you want to advertise on this podcast, you can email smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Join us again next week.